Welcome to Turning Pages, a series of in-depth conversations with authors about their works.
All right, well, local author Josiah Neufeld's Temple at the End of the Universe has been out for a little while, and I'm grateful to get the chance to finally talk to him about it as we head into the Winnipeg International Writers Festival and his appearance at the festival. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I want to ask you, I guess the first question is, at what point did this journey become a book? Because this is a, you know, a recounting of a spiritual journey of your own that, I mean, at what point did you realize maybe this is a book rather than just something I'm going through?
Yeah, well, it was certainly a number of years in the making, and I tend to write about things that keep me up at night. So climate change was definitely one of those things that I was thinking a lot about, and you know, as a writer, I gravitate towards things that are concerning me, and I started writing articles about it. I did a research trip to Bangladesh for a magazine to write about how climate change was going to impact farmers in that country, and I think that I also pitched a series of columns to Broadview magazine. Some of your listeners may be familiar with it. It's a publication that's affiliated with the United Church of Canada that I've written for a number of times. And I pitched a series of columns. So each month in the magazine, there would be a column featuring somebody who is working on climate change, a scientist, a poet, a minister, a priest, you know, all different professions, but I specifically wanted to talk to them about how climate change and species loss and the sort of environmental crises, the interlocking environmental crises we're facing, intersected with their spiritual journeys. That was something I was interested in because, you know, that dimension of our experience as humans has always been very fascinating to me. I grew up quite in a very, you know, religious home. A family of evangelical Mennonites. My parents were missionaries in West Africa. And as an adult, I went through a deconstruction phase of that story, that worldview that I'd been given, as people will read about in the book. But I've always felt like a deeply spiritual person connected to that realm, that dimension of human existence. And fascinated by other people's spiritual stories and religious experiences, and so I find that in my writing I'm almost always, you know, I have my antenna tuned to that part of people's story because it's a part of, you know, religion, spirituality is part of how we tell our stories about who we are in the world and what makes sense and why we're here, and most people have some connection to that kind of storytelling. So I was interested in that, and I started interviewing people. And I think while I was doing this column series, I kind of knew in the back of my mind that I was collecting material for a book that explored that edge of the ecological crises that we were experiencing, that we are experiencing. And so I started putting these, you know, collecting these interviews and thinking about the people I was talking to as potential characters in a longer work. And I didn't necessarily conceive of it as a memoir right from the beginning. I wanted to do narrative journalism, which is what I studied at I have a master's degree in creative writing from UBC, and you know, before that I did it. Undergraduate degree in journalism, and did a lot of, you know, newspaper reporting for local weekly papers here in Winnipeg and the surrounding area. And then when I did a creative writing degree, I kind of learned how to bring all the tools of research and journalism into conversation with the tools of creative writing, you know, narrative and narrative structure and character and mood and all those things. So that I knew that I wanted to write you know, a work of narrative journalism that carries the reader along on a story. And so that was kind of the shape that the book was taking in my imagination. And I think at a certain point I realized that I was going to need to be a character in this book, because I have my own spiritual story in relation to what's happening. And so I started to realize, oh, okay, you know, my story can be a thread that will, you know, tie this whole work of exploratory journalism together and give it some kind of a narrative frame.
So, I mean, you do question other people, but at some point it becomes an interrogation of yourself, that even when you're talking to these other people, it's with an eye towards kind of answering the questions you have internally.
Yeah.
Did that, like come out of just the exploratory journalism of talking to these people, or were you like truly searching and not maybe necessarily conscious of that search when you first started talking to these people?
I've always been searching. I think that's my nature as a person. Ever since I was, you know, a young child, I've been the kind of person who asks questions and searches things and questions, you know, the narratives that I've been given. And so that spiritual journey, that spiritual kind of exploration or quest was something that I'd been on my whole life. It was just a matter of recognizing that could be a part of this story, that could, you know, enter into this research that I was doing and sort of illuminate it in a way. And so, you know, it's always a vulnerable thing to tell your own story. So I think there was a part of me that was somewhat hesitant to you know, I knew that if I told my story, I was going to have to tell it in a very vulnerable way in order to connect with my readers. And so there was some hesitation as I was thinking about whether and how and in what way I would include myself in the story. But ultimately I decided to go for it. And I felt like that my own spiritual search, you know, connected very, very much with what I was researching and discovering in my conversations with other people. So it did feel like once I started working those threads together in my writing, it felt like a very natural connection.
Was that hesitation around like how revelatory you'd have to be about yourself and your own sort of struggles? Or was it just a question of like not necessarily wanting to make the story entirely about you when you're, you know, talking to all these other people?
I think some of both. I as a journalist, I'm usually quite outward focused. My curiosity leads me to, I'm very interested in other people's stories. And when I'm sitting down with them, I'm completely focused on hearing their experience. But I also find that in interviews, sometimes a lot of the time actually sharing a bit about my own experience of the topic draws people out and allows them to become more comfortable, you know, sharing their own story. It's a big thing to ask a person to share their own story in detail and in a vulnerable way. It's something that I'm asking all the time of my interview subjects. And so I think it's also, you know, I don't want to turn the spotlight towards myself when I'm interviewing someone too much. It's not about me, but also, you know, sharing stories in a reciprocal way can really open people up. So I did have some hesitation. I was like, well, do I want to be, this story isn't necessarily about me, but I did also understand, you know, the kinds of books that I love reading are first person narrative journalism, because I'm fascinated by that genre where the writer includes their own emotional journey and their own response to the information that they're gathering, because that is always part of the story, whether the journalist includes it or not. And I often find that when the writer or the journalist, you know, tells their own story with a lot of honesty and vulnerability, it really can enrich the topic in a powerful way. But at the same time, you know, when I do the in each chapter of the book, I explore a different dimension of the you know the intersections between the ecological crises and people's own spiritual journeys. So I think in each chapter, I try to spend some significant amount of time with my subjects and hear their stories and really let their stories breathe and have their own life. And then I often reflect on that afterwards, and tie it into my own process of discovery.
Right. You mentioned, you know, books that you love to read. In the book you write, for me, the apocalypse became real in the summer of 2019. That summer, I read two alarming books, Elizabeth Colbert's The Sixth Extinction and David Wallace Wells' The Uninhabitable Earth. I'm wondering if you can talk about the significance of those two books and when you say, you know, the apocalypse became real, what you were processing at the time you read those two books.
Yeah, so when I use the word apocalypse, I mean, that has definitely has some religious overtones. My childhood growing up, the idea of apocalypse was this ultimate end of you know the planet, but that would happen on a very you know cosmic level, this battle between good and evil. And I had moved away from that you know idea as an adult, but the you know the idea of apocalypse and endings is very much a part of our culture. All the books and movies about the end of the world. So I think this concept exists very strongly in our culture. And at the time, so I was reading those two books, and a lot of other stuff, but really, you know, The Uninhabitable Earth talks about the different paths that we could take depending on how much carbon we burn. And some of them are quite, you know, terrifying and alarming and it just kind of, I guess reading that book was like, oh, this is real. This is a scary, there's a lot of scary possibilities in our future. And then The Sixth Extinction by Elizabeth Colbert, where she writes about, you know, these other extinction periods that mass extinction periods that our planet has experienced, and how, you know, this time we're looking at mass extinctions, but it's caused by human activity, not by you know natural phenomenon. Those two books were definitely eye openers for me, and I think kind of all of a sudden I was like, oh, this is, you know, they impressed upon me the seriousness, the gravity of the situation that we're facing.
It's another thing where you do write about kind of, or your early belief was, you know, in a ordered universe created by God, and that there was like an interventionist God in some way, and that your youth and adulthood have been kind of maybe not necessarily consumed, but occupied by reconciling what you've seen in the world with that notion, right? And that if it was truly true, certain things wouldn't have happened or we wouldn't be at the place we're at. And figuring out what God and spirituality mean to you is like, obviously the thread that goes through this entire book, but is it like, is your reading directed towards answering those questions? Like, were you, you know, approaching those two books and other books that you talk about in this one with the hope of finding some answers, or just kind of adjusting to the reality as you see it now?
Mm-hmm. I think I'm always looking for answers. I'm always looking for a new level of understanding of what it means to be human at this you know pivotal period in our history, and what that means for me. What that means to live a life that's meaningful, that's spiritual, that's compassionate, that's you know fulfilling the task or the calling I have at this, you know, me, who I am at this point in human history. So I think there's, you know, on one level, I was, as I was researching this book, I was just gathering scientific information and gathering cultural information about how we're responding to the crisis, and exploring it kind of on an objective level. But at the same time, that spiritual quest is always ongoing. I'm always trying to sort of synthesize what I'm gathering and learning about the world with the inner journey that I'm on. And I think a lot of it, you know, in my childhood, I grew up with this idea of this, as you mentioned, this interventionist God who has his hands on the controls, who's in some way ensuring a good outcome for us. And I don't conceive of, you know, that kind of God anymore. I think of the forces of nature and human activity on the earth. They're unfolding and they're happening, and I don't think there's some kind of, you know, divine being who's, you know, controlling these things like a chessboard. I think my understanding of spirituality at this point, you know, it's more a little bit more esoteric. I think there's a spiritual element to our existence on this planet, and there's, you know, unifying forces like love and compassion and life. You know, what's the force that causes life to continually exist and flourish and find ways to survive humongous crises? You know, those are on some level spiritual concepts for me. And I don't think of you know, some all-powerful divine being running the show. I think of it in much more integrated way. Sorry, what was the question you asked?
I think you kind of came towards it there. I was curious, like, just in terms of the, like, seeking out answers versus, you know, just like continuing to inquire, I guess, is kind of maybe the in terms of your reading and whether it's directed, that kind of thing. But I get what you're saying. I do want to kind of maybe pivot away from that, but kind of talk about like a larger thing around belief. And that's the schism between like evangelicals and the environmental movement. And you talk about kind of like the early origins, like Project Plowshare and things like that. There was a environmentalist movement within evangelicals at one point, and then through, you know, the actions of certain leadership, the like most ardent like denialists of climate change are evangelicals in the US in particular. And I'm wondering if you can talk about, like, did you have a sense of that before you started researching within this book? Like, was that something you were really familiar with, kind of having grown up in an evangelical tradition, or was that something that you were surprised to learn in terms of the history?
There were definitely some surprises there. I think that, you know, the evangelicals I grew up among were pretty attentive to caring for the earth. You know, that was the theology or the thinking was the earth is a gift to humans from God, and it's humans' responsibility to take care of it, you know, tend it like a garden in some ways. So I was, first of all, when I started digging into the research, I remember reading statistics like, you know, white evangelicals in the US are the demographic most likely to not believe in climate change or not believe that it's caused by human activity. And reading the percentage of white evangelical Americans who don't believe in climate change, and who are resisting any kinds of efforts to any kind of policies to reduce the use of fossil fuels, in some ways surprised me. Maybe because I was outside of that world already. I'd been outside of it for a while, and I didn't grow up in the U.S. My parents are both Canadian. But when I started doing the research and exploring those connections between, you know, the white evangelicals and the Republican Party and oil development, and I was surprised at how strong those alliances were and how deep those convictions went. I read a book by Robin Veldman, who's an academic, a researcher, and she spent time in. She was asking some of the same questions. She was curious about why white evangelicals were so resistant to responding to climate change. And in her research, she found that actually there was a time, a couple of, you know, a decade or two ago, when the American evangelicals were ready to sign major petitions calling for action on climate change, because it connected to their theology of caring for the earth. And then there was this shift that happened, where some of the old guard influential leaders in the among white evangelicals, you know, felt like, oh, this is we're losing control of this thing to a younger generation. And they really made a huge effort to connect climate action with sort of this anti-Christian ideas that they told people were spreading in the U.S. and really made it part of the culture wars, and this whole network of Christian television and radio stations really went to work on you know, interviewing people who were skeptical of the science and really connecting climate denial with the evangelical identity, and making it part of the culture wars, which, you know, that was a pretty significant shift.
Yeah, you wrote that, you know, when Donald Trump was elected, you know, the last thread that tied me to Christianity had been cut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just necessarily Trump himself, but the fact that, like, the support that he got from the evangelical community
mm-hmm.
created.
Yeah, it was a
schism.
Shocking moment for me. A shocking moment and a terrifying moment, and realizing, oh, these are in some ways my people who elected this person. I couldn't believe it was happening, and I felt very, very alienated from that expression of Christianity at that time, and I think that's when I really started digging into the research on what connected, you know, how white evangelicalism had become so opposed to you know, the values that seemed, you know, the values that seemed to me to be essentially Christian are caring for each other, other humans and other species on the planet. And how did this shift happen was baffling to me and scary. And I wanted to find out more about what was going on.
Speaking of being alienated, you write at the beginning of this book, this is for the lost. Do you feel that you are in some way, you have this through the journey of writing this book, are you found, or are you still in the search phase?
I think that the answer is yes. I am found. I'm also in the search is a lifelong thing. The spiritual life is a life of searching. It's not a life of you know, arriving at fixed truths. I think that it's always going to be a process of exploration and discovery. There's a philosopher, Paul Ricoeur, who talks about this idea of going through the process of, you know, you believe in something as a child, you grow up, you start to question it, you deconstruct, and then through that process, you come to a new level of belief where you re-embrace some of that childhood framework that you had, but on a different level. It means something different. Maybe you believe in it at a more metaphoric level instead of a literal level. And that process can continue your whole life, going through that cycle multiple times. So yes, I think that I don't think of myself as lost in the sense of you know, damned or outside of the spiritual world. I think that I'm very much on the path at the place where I need to be. It's a place of discovery and a place of mystery, and my concept of spirituality or the divine is much more, feels much less concrete than it did when I was growing up, and it's much more connected to mystery and discovery. You know, in the book I write about my spiritual director who kind of guides me along, and I have these fears. I come to her with my fears about the future of the planet and my children and whether I'm doing the right thing in the world, and I'm like, maybe I'm just completely, you know, fallen off the path of the spiritual path. And she's like, she kind of laughs at me and she says, you know, I don't know that you could fall off the spiritual path. What would that even look like? And you know, that reassurance, that spiritual director really kind of held my hand through some difficult times. If you grow up with a kind of spirituality that says there is an in and an out, there's the lost and the saved, it takes a bit of, you know, that's pretty deeply rooted in a person's psyche, and it takes a while to recover from that, I think. And so I believe that I you know, I have moved on from that kind of binary thinking. I don't think that there are people who are saved and people who are lost. I think that we're all, you know, navigating the world in the best way we can. But the journey continues. The journey into mystery continues for sure.
So the only ones who are truly lost are the ones who are not searching at all, I guess, in some sense, or that like the only failed spiritual journey is like a cessation of a spiritual journey.
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess I think there are people who aren't doing the spiritual work they need to pay attention to who they are in the world and asking important questions about, you know, their responsibilities and their emotional journey. So yeah, I'm not sure who the, yeah, I can't answer for other people who, in some senses, people are all at the place that they need to be, I suppose. But it definitely seems to me as if some people are paying closer attention to their own journey and their own responsibilities than others.
What that suggests to me is that everyone could benefit from reading this book. It's A Search for Spirituality in the Anthropocene, The Temple at the End of the Universe. Josiah, thanks very much for taking some time to talk about the book.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.